welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And, tonight I'm going to be more than a host, I hope, but at any rate, we've had some technical difficulties. Hopefully, you all can hear me as I am speaking. And tonight's show, I thought we would do a show in a more comprehensive way of understanding evil so that you can get a better picture of what evil really is and does. I've talked about many different pieces of evil through the years. The reason I've been emphasizing it in the last few years is because it's taking over our planet, and many people don't get how or what that means, and they misinterpret the words that I say usually or much of the time, and that in itself is creating some conflicts. The important point is that if we're going to overcome evil, we've got to understand it. Understanding is different than knowledge. Knowledge is like knowledge could be a bunch of facts about what evil does or what it did. But the ability to apply that knowledge in a way in which you can overcome evil, change it, do something to change in yourself is a whole other issue. That's where you need consciousness or understanding. They're the same word in esoteric meanings. And so that's what I hope to do tonight, is to help some, maybe everybody who is tuned in, to being able to say to themselves, well, I got it. This is what it's about. And these are the kinds of things in my life, each of your lives, that you can choose to do, if you want, to make a difference about the present circumstances that we're in. So let's begin. And we're going to really go back in time. Before the existence of the Earth, before the existence of our sun, before the existence of the really operational parts of this galaxy. The reason for that is although the galaxies were formed not... We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. Yes, we did have some technical difficulties. Some of what I just said, I believe, was heard. However, we got kind of disconnected. So, again, I will start pretty much where I think I was cut off at and try it again. All right. So let's take it from the point where some of the oldest galaxies, which are definitely older than our galaxy, but our galaxy is still pretty old. These oldest galaxies developed human beings before our galaxy did. That just makes sense if they're older. And when they did, those human beings, some of them, on some planets, chose to pursue what we'll call evil. Now, I'm going to describe that better in a minute, but I want to start the show by explaining that there has been evil even before there was life in the galaxy that we're in. So evil has been around for a very, very, very long time. Now, where in the heck does evil come from if it's been around for so long? And it comes from the construct of the opposites, in many respects, of the creator of the universe. The quagmire we are in is this. The creator, God, chose that life would be free to choose its own way of being creative in its existence. And human life would not only have that factor, but would be also free to find its own creator, because humans are the first form of life that can discover and understand and co-create with their creator. This is important to realize, because it's that point that we as humans have a unique characteristic not found in animals or plants, minerals, or any other kind of existence of life between the kingdoms that I just mentioned. We have this nature which resembles our Creator. We can, because of our senses, sense our Creator in much of life and within ourselves, both internally within ourselves and in ourselves as reflections coming from other people. So we have this grand ability, which is wonderful. Within that ability, we're also able to choose whether or not we want to participate in having anything to do with our Creator, because we're free. We're given freedom to choose how or what we're going to create, including creating more of ourselves in relationship to God. Some people choose to not do that. Now, you might ask yourself, why would anybody who has any sense at all choose to not be part of the Creator? And the reason is oftentimes the anger or frustration with the freedom in the system. The apparent paradox is that if there is supposed to be this omniscient, omnipotent being who is the Creator of everything.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, I'm on now. How do you like that? I think we may have corrected what was a pretty bad technical problem. And I'm going to continue. For those of you who are just tuning in or may have forgotten what I already said, again, I'll try to make it fast. But we also are going to go a little bit longer to make up for the difference. There's nobody after me tonight, so I can make up for some time. If you can stay on and listen, then I'll try to give you a complete show. So we're going to go back to what I was saying. Evil is a part of our universe because it exists due to the advent of there being human beings. And human beings started in the universe before there was even life in our galaxy. That's a long time ago. Now, if we consider that period of time, evil's had a huge amount of time to develop itself in some pretty odd ways. I mean, some of these ways actually resemble almost a mirror of God. And again, I'll restate what I said about evil and God. Evil has chosen to, we'll say, negate, be against, and sometimes to deny, but usually that's just a lie. It actually believes there is a creator. But to want to harm or even destroy its own creator because it sees things like natural disasters. People have in the past seen things like natural disasters and other terrible occurrences. The disaster itself may not affect an evil a person who is not yet evil, but the loss of loved people and loss of possessions and loss of, we'll say, abilities and creativities and inventions and who knows what else, even pets. All of these things have taken their toll on some people into believing that if God is omnipotent and omniscient and all the things that are claimed that God is, then why are these things occurring? It isn't in these cases that evil is doing these things. It seems like it's an act of God, at least an act of nature. And so people over time, in the beginning of the first galaxy that developed evil in it, eventually went dark, by the way. Dark meaning that there is no life in that universe, I mean that galaxy, excuse me, that is anything other than evil. That's hard to imagine. It's taken over that galaxy as much as a galaxy can be taken over. And so there's only a couple of these kinds of galaxies. Now, there's still some light in them, but not very much. And the concept here is that the people who went evil because they became frustrated, disgruntled, hostile, angry, sometimes murderously so, that things in their life seemed to be against what God stood for. And therefore, they believed God was responsible. What they didn't understand is what I said towards the beginning of the show now, which is that God gives free will to life so life can grow on its own. And in that free will includes God not interfering in the natural issues of forces, and especially in the physical plane and the lowest part of the astral world, where the natural state of energy dominates, even destroys life. This is the challenge for all life, is to, in these realms, to grow and prosper and still stay connected to their creator when so many forces seem to be horribly against them. Humans have the capacity to understand the forces and the terribleness that they do. And they also have the capacity to understand their creator and the love that the creator could have, but they have trouble bringing these ideas together in a way that they can accept the wonderment of a being that has the compassion and love to want to cease all of this suffering at the lowest levels of the universe, yet doesn't, because freedom and love are more important to be found and created by life itself than to be given and then removed from the ability to be creative in those realms. It would make us all partially slaves if God chose what evil wants from God to accept, to be accepted as its creator, as its benefactor, as its love relationship parentally in a sense. And it's a misunderstanding, but it's a misunderstanding that once you go down the path of it, becomes a trap. In order to get beyond the misunderstanding, one has to grow one's consciousness to a level that exceeds the level at which the person first made the break. And how do you do that when you're angry at God? How do you do that when you want to destroy God in all of life? And then you convince human life, other human life besides yourself, that God doesn't exist. So it will become amenable to being destructive to God. So evil, ultimately, you could say, does seek power. But even in the seeking of power, it really wants the power to destroy its creator. That's what it really wants. Because it believes its creator is defective and has sold life and it short in some kind of silliness of allowing terrible things to occur to generally good people. All right, so we can look at this problem from a lot of different angles. And I've never really tried to reveal what I'm talking about tonight, have so far even, because it's so hard to grasp. And in the past, when I've alluded to some of these ideas, some people actually have believed that the evil's right. I'm wrong. That the evil has it right. In other words, they've reversed my argument, so to speak, and they said, well, you really haven't proven it to be that if God does exist, so what good is that? I mean, look at all the crap that's going on. If God is all that, and that doesn't count what evil itself is doing. I'm not talking about that. That's another part of tonight's show, but I'm just talking about the things that evil hasn't done, but the things that happen, that evil becomes self-generated into believing that its own creator is unfair, is obviously mistaken, and isn't all it's cracked up to be. It must not be omniscient and omnipotent, because if it was all those things, why would this stuff be going on? And it's not that far of a stretch to accept that evil actually created itself from this paradox of God, if you really think about it. Now, maybe listening to me, you're not convinced yet, but if you do some serious thinking about it and you observe what you believe to be evil in the world, you may see the seeds of what I'm talking about. So this is the beginning of how evil got going. It didn't get going because God made a mistake. It didn't get going because other evil created, because then you'd be in the chicken and egg problem. Because how did the first evil start, right? I explained that away by what I just explained. And it didn't start because there's some inadequacy, some innate problem in being human. It started because in order for there to be freedom and love, love that is unconditional love, there needs to be a relative hands-off of God in the lowest, most worst parts of the universe to exist in, which is where we are right now, by the way. And in some aspects, the lowest parts of the astral world have some elements, but not this, near the same amount of forces. It's the forces that are the difficult. The forces are so unimaginably harsh that without some supernatural thing preventing the forces from affecting humans, it seems natural to come to, for some people, to come to this conclusion. the way around it and the way that the answer to how to solve the problem has to do with the senses that I keep referring to in many shows that we have. Those senses tell us that God exists numerous ways every day for most people. And it's when you turn off those senses, when you ignore them, or when they are damaged through the forces, that problems arise. Now, obviously, damage to the senses cannot be necessarily prevented, because there are these natural things that happen. God's not necessarily doing it to us, but terrible things happen due to the surroundings of the physical world. They're very, very harsh at times. And the results can be that in order to overcome the damage, the person has to have help, not from God, but from other people. This is the difference between us and a large amount of the other parts of life, is not only are we aware of God, not only are we able to co-serve with God, co-create with God, but we are able to mimic God by, in very small ways, by helping each other. Charity is sometimes referred to as this nature in human beings. It goes deeper than that. And that's what needs to happen when people are harmed by the forces around them. And they aren't necessarily karmically related to their individual efforts. They're more karmically related to the population around them, this country, this state, the unit of what we'll call social connection, whatever that might be, because in different ages it's been very different. That those social connections create a kind of karma outside of individual karma, which I have referred to as national and world. Many of you know that. But there's different ways of defining it. And the connection of that karma imposes upon each of us the necessity to be charitable and helpful to people who suffer from these quote-unquote forces. Now, having the wisdom to know when it is not an individual karmic issue and it's caused by these forces, you know, so great, is the difficulty. It takes more consciousness collectively from the people involved than sometimes they have on an individual level. But yet, that can and does happen. And you see, and sometimes leadership from some of them as well, who have a better sense of consciousness than the rest. This is the ultimate solution for the quagmire of how evil gets going. So if there is sufficient charity coming from people wise enough to know the difference between someone having caused an individual karmic problem for themselves, which brings many forces into people's lives, compared to them not doing that necessarily, that they did respond to the world with enough consciousness, we'll say, to be semi, or if not somewhat more, responsible to doing good, and yet they still get clobbered. Well, in those situations, charity is the obvious answer. And the places where there is charity has always been the places where there's the least amount of evil. Isn't that interesting? But when there's a lack of charity, then you end up with evil being growing more because there's no safety net. And there's lots of arguments against what I'm saying. I want you to know that I'm only proposing this because some of the arguments get into the question of, well, if someone is conscious enough to have gotten themselves into some kind of mess, no matter how much distant the forces are from their personal quote-unquote life, shouldn't they have been able to avoid it?
Maybe. I don't know how you avoid a meteor coming from outer space that you never knew about, or how you avoid an earthquake that you never had any in a place that never had earthquakes, or a bunch of other things, like a huge tidal wave coming from an earthquake that's thousands of miles away that you don't even know about. I mean, or how about something like an airplane falling out of the sky and running into somebody? Or if you're on the airplane. I mean, there are so many things, and of course I cover this just right from the first chapter of Life's Hidden Meaning, that there is such a thing as these kinds of events. There is a connection between the people involved when it happens, and sometimes those people do need charity, but it isn't the necessary the person that is involved with, because if they die, they can't get charity from people here anymore. They get it in the astral world, hopefully, but it's their relatives and friends that can turn evil, you see. It isn't necessarily the person who is harmed. It's all of the surrounding people that charity is necessary for, compassion is necessary for, love is necessary for. And so these are the ways that you can overcome the beginning instances that evil starts. And it usually starts small and it starts young. But once it gets going, it's a battle to overcome. Okay. So, if we're talking about where evil is centrally located, it's located in the eighth sphere of the astral world. Why does it exist there and not in the physical world where all the forces are? Well, this is going to sound weird, but it is so difficult to live in the physical world that the evil, really evil dudes, and they mostly are men, by the way, exist in the astral world because it's too hard to live here. They may incarnate on occasion, really, but they prefer to be in a place where it's a lot less forceful. Even a sphere, as forceful as it is nowhere near as forceful as the physical world is. And it's from that place that they can have an effect on the etheric and the physical world. As they move away from there, it takes too much energy, power, for them to sustain themselves and have any effect on what takes place in this dimension. It's very difficult to do cross-dimensional things. What they mostly do is they control some monstrous-like creatures still in the etheric world, but they're almost all gone. They control some monsters in the seventh and the sixth subworlds, and they are not too much around these days either. And they possess people, and they sometimes really incarnate, and they possess people both in the physical, the etheric, which are ghost-like people, and then also in the seventh and sixth subworlds, they possess people. So that's where they are good at possession, and in recent times they've started possessing people even in the sixth and the seventh Miniesic subworlds to some extent. So wow, this is a lot that they got going for them in a sense, because they're not really living in the most forceful parts, but they're using the forces in those parts to get new converts and to continually overcome others. Because the forces against us, while we're physically alive, weaken us and leave us more open to possession by evil people. Remember, these are still technically a form of humans. All right, so we've got some basis for understanding what evil is a bit better, and how it came about from seemingly nowhere. It didn't. It came from somewhere. Now, evil also, once it gets a hold of a galaxy, and I have to be careful here. I know a lot more about this than I'm going to speak, because science has not yet discovered some of the things I'm going to report about. Evil uses some of the energies that are funneled back through black holes, and it uses that energy. It short circuits it, actually, and uses some of that energy in its own galaxy.
or galaxies. It's a couple of them, and it has control over them. And in some parts of a galaxy, sometimes, particularly if it's lacking in enough stars, active stars, and there it usually has more black holes in it, and it could short-circuit. And it also, therefore, has control over something called dark energy. But I can't tell you much of how and why that's occurring, other than think about what I just said. It may be dawn on you. I will tell you what it says in the textbook I wrote, Life's Hidden Meaning. It says that the stars that are actively functioning, that we believe, and it's true, are the causes of life as we understand it. The those stars have a form of life, we'll call it, where they need to recycle the remnants of useful energies that are running low on a thing called prana, and also are not very effective in helping planets to work in chi. And so that energy moves back up the spectrum into, believe it or not, the atmic plane, that's way up there, and gets recycled into from a black hole here to a white hole there. And white holes can also appear in other places. So stars appear in other places, like the buddhic, the mental, and the astral worlds as well. No stars exist in the monadic dimension, or in the logoic part of our universe. We're the most advanced beings existing. They exist outside of what we would consider to be even stars. But the energy that comes through, there's some energy that dominates our present universe. And that universe, that energy we could call a form of dark energy. It really isn't what we think it is, and it's misconstrued and misunderstood. It has to do with intradimensional issues, and then there's a thing called dark matter, which is a whole other thing. So, and it's too bad the names are so closely associated, because they aren't really the same animal. But a large part of the universe is actually dark matter. So it's a whole different thing. And there is a relationship between dark energy and how it's being used to run some galaxies, and also how dark energy is. The dark energy is usually outside of a galaxy. As a matter of fact, it almost exclusively likes to hang out outside of a galaxy. It can intersperse and go through a galaxy, but it doesn't involve itself. But in an evil galaxy, it becomes very involved with the galaxy. And it doesn't just stick outside. So it's like everything gets changed around. Can't tell you any more about that, but you can think about it. It may be an important thing for some people with scientific ideas to think about. Okay, so that kind of gives us some foundation, we'll say, of what it means to be evil in a very generalized sense. But let's talk about evil as it has been developed here on Earth. So we're going from the stars and the galaxies. Now we're going to come back and be more centrally focused right here on Earth. But I'm going to go back historically and talk about evil so that there's a better understanding of how it started on Earth and why, and where it's going, especially today. That's probably going to be the most important part of the show. We're also not going to do a normal break because we played it a couple times already, as far as I know. And I will at some point just mention a couple things about some, we'll call them commercial kinds of things. We'll talk about those. I'll just do it myself and won't actually leave the air, hopefully not for a while. Okay. And so let me begin where evil began. Before there was human beings, there was no evil. Before human beings were in physical, dense physical form, there was no evil. Why is that? Because you need the forces of the dense physical world to convince people, at least in the beginning, that God's no good. God's doing the wrong thing. Because the forces tell you that, because the forces are doing too many terrible things to people, and you get upset. Maybe you have a child, wife, husband, any other friends or whatever, killed or tortured or whatever, because of forces. Yeah. Not necessarily caused by other humans, either. All right. So when did we become dense physical? Well, we started becoming dense physical about 16 and a half million years ago, but the process slowly took time until about 8.5 million years ago. We were predominantly dense physical, and that means that the world around us, the forces around us, affected us a lot more. When when human beings were Lemurians, meaning the race of people that were around, say, 10 million years ago, they were attempting to live in a world in which their etheric bodies were becoming equalized with their physical, and therefore the forces of the physical world were more and more encumbering upon them. It was more difficult to live. When you're in a partial etheric form, you can sense things way differently and easier than you can when you're in dense physical. The senses actually work better. Your electromagnetic nature allows you to literally leave your physical body alone and go off in your etheric for many miles and even further than that, check things out, come back. Because you have an etheric double-ganger form of yourself that part of you can leave and come back. And that makes it much easier to interrelate with the environment. When you want to be dense physical, you can. If you want to, say, have some form of dense physical sex, you can have that. But then you have to combine the two bodies. And over time, the first couple races of Lemurians did this and got themselves, as they continued to do more and more dense physical things that did involve forces, they became less and less, we'll call it etherically attuned. They lost their third eye, which gave them a lot of visual etheric sense at a great distance, and they became more like what we used to be. That's all well and good. However, starting from about 8 million years ago and up to about 6 million years ago, Lemurians started to change considerably. Some became highly spiritual because they recognized that God was there and they understood why forces existed so they could be free, etc. All the things I said earlier. And they got it. But gradually, more and more of the Lemurian population started to become disgruntled. They said, what kind of God? This is crazy. We just had a terrible earthquake. We lost a quarter of our population. There's been a terrible famine. People are starving. You know, it's hard to keep these physical bodies going. They require so much energy, so much food. Beyond that, and that's another thing, the food requirements go up exponentially when you become more dense physical than etheric. You've got to have a lot more energy going in the body to keep it alive. And so the bodies have to get smaller because you can keep a huge body. If most of it's etheric, it doesn't use much energy. It's all electromagnetic, you know. Just like as we become more effective in using electromagnetic energies today in the physical society we live in, we become more efficient. It takes less energy to do almost everything. But back in those days, they were going the reverse direction. And so they were using more and more energy, and that requires more and more food, and things got more difficult because you didn't have enough food, because bad things happened in the weather and all that other stuff. So you see, this was a condition native to the world. And by the time we get to the sixth sub-race of Lemurians, most of them, most, were very spiritual because they got the ideas that I expressed in tonight's show. They actually were taught by superhuman beings that came from other worlds that helped them, mostly from within our solar system, but some from outside. And they were helpful. They did help. But there was a few that were discontented by this. Said, well, you know, I'm not so convinced that this business of God giving us freedom and love is such a wonderful thing when, heck, take a look at this. Half of my friends are dead or suffering immensely. I'm suffering. Why have this? Okay, so you see the arguments. And by the time you get to the last subrace, although the seeds were set actually in the sixth subrace, the seventh subrace of Lemurians, some of them said, you know what? I don't buy it. I think these alien masters from whatever world they're from are just feeding us a crock. They tell us about a God who does this and does that, and everything, ageless wisdom, ooh, and that's what that is. And then we're all here to eventually learn how to be self-created into our God's image. We're in God's image, whatever that is. What, does God sit around suffering all the time? You know, they kind of like rejected the whole idea. And, yep, there's evil. And so they started working against it. It wasn't a lot in the beginning, but by the middle of that subrace, 10-20% of people were evil. A large number. That's a lot of people. Lemuria was not as large in size as the later continent of Atlantis. And this is a temporary continent, replacing effectively the continent of Antarctica. First there was Lemuria, and then there was Atlantis. And because Antarctica is just a frozen continent, not doing anything, so that these more temperate places could be temporary continents for the first races of human beings. And some of the degenerated species of what we call today forerunners of humanity were, and now we've discovered them to be 7 million years old, older, and some of them were more advanced than Lucy, who was 3.5 billion years ago, you know. Australopithecus. These other humanoid type of beings are more advanced. Where did they come from? Well, they're degenerated from the seventh monthly subraces of Lemurians. Some of them were degenerated from earlier subraces. And, you know, it's some like the fifth is an example. And when they degenerate, they go off and live in weird places. They don't stay usually among their own kind because they don't have the senses any longer. So they may live in a place like Africa, which is the, you know, and Africa is a natural place for Lemurians to go hang out at because the subrace is common to it and it kind of falls within it. So we look at this and we can say, well, then why? Why didn't somebody do something to change all this? Well, there wasn't something done, actually. While the seventh subrace was ravaging and enslaving people, they mostly didn't enslave Lemurians. They went off and found these people called Atlanteans. In fact, they were way better to enslave because they were so much smaller and weaker than they were. If you're going to have slaves, you might as well have slaves that are useful, somewhat intelligent, and that you can easily bang around if they don't do what you want. And the seven subrace of Lemurians were big, nasty people. I mean, a female could destroy most of the males of today without any problem whatsoever. These were big folks. And the Atlanteans at that time were not all that big and not very strong. And but the only thing they had was technology, and they said, we better outsmart these folks or they're going to enslave all of us and kill the rest. And that's sure enough what they were doing when they could get a hold of them. Luckily, it was difficult because they lived an ocean apart from each other. But still, that went on for quite a while. Finally, the Atlanteans
said, wait, we've got enough. We have had enough of this. About 4 million years. We've had enough of this. We are not going to be pushed around anymore by these hideous, evil people. And so they decided they were going to make it their, it's do or die. They were going to do everything they could to destroy the remainder of the Lemurians or assimilate those that were good into their own culture. Pretty odd idea, if you think about it. It came from ageless wisdom. They believed in it at that time, and they were trying to do the good thing. We won't just destroy our enemies. We'll try to bring some of them into being part of us. And they actually did, successfully. But by 3 million years ago, they were winning big time, and they were wiping out the evil parts of Lemuria. Eventually, what finished Lemuria was not just the Atlanteans, but the continent they existed on. So, you know, subsided into the bowels of the earth, if you want to call it that. The earth opened, and what was the continent of Lemuria went not below just the ocean, but below the bottom of the ocean into the mantle. How do we know that? Because recent evidence shows the continent is there. In the mantle. Oh, you don't believe it? Okay. Also, there's evidence the continent of Atlantis is there, but it's slid underneath and is joined to the continent of Africa. Okay. But it's true. Check on it. I know. So both of those continents still could be found in the mantle by recent technology. I'm talking about the last few years now. I'm not talking about 100 years ago. All right, so that was the beginning of evil on Earth. Before that, there were races of purely etheric people, but we know that they couldn't become evil or weren't likely to become evil because there weren't enough forces for them. And the early Lemurians were not prone to evil because they weren't as affected by the dense physical world because they were so etheric. It's only as they got denser and denser that this problem came up. Okay. So if they got rid of most of the evil by either bringing it into and teaching it through charity and love how to become good and destroying the rest of it, then what went wrong? I mean, this seems like it's such a good solution. It would seem like there shouldn't be a problem. Well, you know, it's kind of biblical, the tree of knowledge. You see, the fifth subrace of Atlanteans had nothing to do with the destruction of evil Lemurians. As a matter of fact, they knew almost nothing about it in any direct sense. They knew something historically, as best as history could follow after millions of years. But they didn't know, really, on a first-hand basis, evil. And at the same time, they were taught, a bit overzealously, facts, information, about how the world works, so to speak, without giving them enough consciousness development, understanding of the knowledge that they were privy to. And so they started becoming smarties. You know, oh, yeah, we know everything. And they started falling into the same trap. Well, how come there's so many bad things going on in Atlantis these days? This is like a million years ago, okay? And there's so many bad things going on. We have these glaciations and those terrible changes of weather. And people are dying here and there. And so, again, we start over again with the process of beginning evil. Except it was accelerated because it was not just the forces caused by the physical world, it was the forces caused by the astral nature. And what's that? What is a force in the astral nature? It's that they had such strong desires to be, we'll call it more intelligent, to be special, and to have influence over others,
they were still more controlled by their astral nature than their mental, but they were the more mental race of the Atlanteans up to that point, and they thought they knew more than they did. Their knowledge was based upon information, not understanding. Their lack of understanding caused them to start rejecting God again, especially since they got a lot more information than they should have about the nature of life after death, especially some of the subworlds and that sort of thing. And it didn't lend itself to increasing their universal or unrestricted love for each other and other things. Instead, it led to the desire to have sometimes a kind of very narrow form of love and to want to, have the ability to travel to the astral dimensions, subdimensions. And some did. And this became a prominent issue. As it developed more and more, the people during that time, some of them said, you know what? Why do we even need God? Even if God existed, or does exist, doesn't do much, does it? I mean, heck, we've got all these crazy things going on, and it's all up to us to solve them and do everything. What's God good for? And, of course, they became uncharitable. They lost their humility. They became at the beginnings of what we will call egotistical. And they weren't as egotistical as we are today, but for what knowledge they did have, they were very egotistical. Oh, I know, because I got it. And where did they get it from? They sometimes got it from some of these more advanced beings who weren't careful enough in giving information. They thought that, oh, we could trust these disciples of Angel's Wisdom who haven't proven to themselves, much less to us, that they truly are convinced of the existence and the need for God. So that became the problem, looks like. One not easily solvable because, unfortunately, the numbers of people that started becoming this way exponentially grew. Now, why? Well, because the fifth subrace of Atlanteans were focused on mental development, and they were more concerned about having knowledge than anything else in their life, even than physical things, and even more than certain feelings they might have, like, you know, to have fun sex tonight. They might really rather have more knowledge. You would normally think that's a good thing, but they didn't balance it. They became fanatic. And they believed that it made them superior to the people who didn't have knowledge among them. And these were people who called themselves and were identified as being spiritually disciplined. They weren't, of course. But they acted as though they were. And Atlanteans in general were very good at acting. So they got away with it. Even though they were a fifth sub-race, they were still part of the fourth race, which is, you know, very concerned about how it appears, always, and it always was. So evil, again, by the middle of the fifth subrace, and we're not talking that long ago, you know, 900,000 years ago, sounds like a long time, I know, but these folks are growing leaps and bounds in numbers. And more of them are rejecting God. And more of them are concerned about life in other dimensions rather than here. More and more of them are concerned about being superior and being thought of as being special and superior to people who didn't have the knowledge they had or didn't care about the knowledge they had. This is where things went awry. Okay. So, in terms of human history, we keep reinventing evil. I mean, if you look at what I just said, billions of years go by, and now we're doing it again. How come? Are we that stupid? Yes. Evil, in order to overcome this resurgence of evil, you've got to have a clear understanding of what evil is. Or it'll trap you. You'll buy into it eventually because bad things happen to good people eventually and sometimes frequently. Not always, but sometimes. And it can convince especially young people or younger people that even if God exists, who cares? What good is it? And you see, it's not as crazy as it seems. All right. Well, eventually, this whole thing got weird. Evil became so prolific that within a couple more sub-races, getting into the seventh sub-race, it was one out of four people, 25% of the population were evil. Oh, that's just an unheard of number. That's a very, very big number. No, we're nowhere near that number today, by the way. That's a huge amount. And finally, the greater beings beyond human that try to have some input into being of service to the rest of the world, including humanity, eventually it became a necessity to put an end to the Atlantean civilization and let things start all over again. That's a lot different than what happened with the Lemurians, because they were defeated and there was some memory, there were some actual records. So it took a long time for evil to recreate itself. Millions of years. But this only happened a very short time ago, like 11,000 years ago. That's not much at all. But unfortunately, because it now is coming from godlike beings, saying, well, it's either this or Earth goes down the tubes and we just flush it and try again. Well, that's a terrible outcome. So better to try this radical one. And so most of the Atlantean civilization was destroyed or hidden. And the evil ones, for thousands of years, approximately 5,000, were prevented from being able to even incarnate. I won't go into the details about that because there's things in it that are still held to be secret. But at any rate, so you look at this and you say to yourself, holy cow, this is a big deal. Then how come evil came back? Well, within just hundreds of years, after these terrible influences of getting rid of so much of the population and wiping out effectively all the living evil people, you still get some that incarnate again. And they quickly became evil. Even the people who weren't evil before became evil because there was no remembrance, no historical account. It was all wiped out with the enemy. Period. And as difficult as it may be for us to believe today, within a very short time, humanity fell into just disarray and became again victimized by evil very quickly, within hundreds to a few thousand years, depending on the location you're at on the planet. Evil was up and running. Not one out of four people. But they didn't need that at that point. Evil still is learning, remember. And it's attached to
these galaxies. They actually could communicate. They know how to communicate across this vast area where light would take billions and billions of years to reach us. Therefore, no message should be able to get here, right? Well, they can get here in a second or two. How do they do that? I'm not allowed to tell you. But the point is they can do it. So evil is connected to all this embodiment, we'll call it, of darkness everywhere to be found, no matter how distant, in by our terms, distance it is. That's bad. Because now you got the reserves. You got all the evil every place else, more than helpful, more than willing, as a group soul to ensoul all those who want to stand in line and be evil themselves. And that's what took place in this third major event of evil coming in. Came in faster, and something different happened. Before, evil was dominated by the masses turning to darkness and rejecting, we'll say, some parts of God. But none of them being completely evil, or very few of them being completely evil. But it was so dark in general that eventually it did lead to the one in four people I mentioned. It just took a long time. In this new scenario, evil said, well, you know, that wasn't working out so good for us. Well, why don't we try this on Earth, since Earth is such a smelly place anyway. Why don't we get the most evil dudes possible to be part of and incarnate in the system and then enslave all the other folks that normally we've been trying to just let them kind of pass by being semi-dark. So we'll enslave them. And that's not to say slavery wasn't used in Atlantis, but it was. But it wasn't the same. It wasn't used to promote evil. Those enslaved oftentimes fought against evil. This new system was that those that became powerful became mimicked God in every way possible, convincing people that they were some kind of super beings of themselves in their own order, and that there was some promise, so to speak, that if you were enslaved, you could become just like the leader, or some aspect of the leader, as long as you didn't fight against evil, but joined in as a slave, but a slave with privileges. And so this was the new methodology, and it was mostly done in the physical and astral parts of life. So, well, we'll give you more physical comforts, you'll get more power over physical surroundings, and you can reduce the forces. But by doing that, you've got to put the forces onto other people to help enslave them. And then while you're doing that, we'll also make you feel better, because we'll give you sex and other fun, titillating things that people find very desirous, even glamored, in their emotional bodies. So you can have all that as long as you join the evil fold. This was the big attraction. Okay, and so evil now takes on a new kind of dimension, different than the Atlantean evil. Now again, I'm going to compare, comparison between the two. On Atlantis, people were enslaved, but when they were enslaved, they were tortured and used up and discarded. There was very little attempt to bring them into the evil part. As a matter of fact, they were seen as discards. Use them up, who cares? And also in Atlantis, evil was attempting to grow from the masses more. There were still some evil leaders, but there was no, severe big pecking order where there was one giant leader with smaller leaders, because that resembles more evil as it existed in the A-sphere, but it was being replicated on Earth until we get to the fifth race, that's us. And now evil says, okay, now that we got rid of all the knowledge of evil,
people, because they did us in, we have a chance to fool everybody. We'll try to get even the enslaved people to support us. Be a slave, but get privileges. And so that was the New Deal. And it worked. It was extremely seductive. And not only that, they also recognized that instead of not caring about how people felt, let's use what they desire as a means for getting people to be more evil. So if you're at evil level one, you get these desires met. But if you get to evil level five, you get a lot more desires met. If you get to evil level 10, you may be saturated in every desire as often as you want, because you're really a good, evil dude who is still enslaved, but doing your part. You see the differences. Okay. This new kind of evil, it has existed then from, well, more than 7,000, 8,000 years ago. It actually started almost immediately after Atlantis disappeared, but it grew slowly and picked up tempo. And then it became what we would call today the general accepted form of evil. And the other thing that evil did that was different was that it used power, as it has always used power, to take power away from other people and use it themselves. But it used power to be even more threatening and forceful during, we'll say, periods of enslaving people. In the past, the enslavement of people was done more on an individual basis and selectively enough so that there wasn't large groups of resistance. But evil realized that that's a very slow process. It could take hundreds of thousands of years, and it did, and it's just slow. So instead, under the new doctrine, get an army together, use the army to enslave people en masse, and to destroy the enemies in the most obscene and in violent way possible, so that people become so frightened of the forces employed that they're willing to agree to anything from fear. And this was also part of the fifth, our race's new ways of bringing evil in. All that I just said has been adopted by evil in the last, as I said, we'll say last 10,000 years or so, and has become the model of, we'll say, general use until a couple hundred years ago. That was like the big deal. But starting about 1,000 years ago, okay, it would be about 1,100 AD, humans started to develop more of a mental side. Even though the whole race is mentally focused, human beings were not super focused on mental thought, but were balancing it with a very strong astral nature. But eventually the mental side became very, very overpowering. And so by the time we see the beginnings of towns and getting out of the Dark Ages in the Western Hemisphere, and China starts redoing some of its empirical side, we now have a different kind of people. The fifth subrace is coming into existence, starting literally with the Renaissance. And it is a totally different kind of evil that starts developing. Those in the fifth subrace start using what we'll call propaganda. At first, it's more word of mouth, and then sometimes, for those who read, it would be published in some daily paper or something, some way of communication that way. But it doesn't really gain much until the advent of radio. Even the telegraph isn't very effective at doing propaganda, because you need to broadcast it to masses. And talking to a group of people, while effective in its own right to some extent, just can't control the mental nature of huge populations of people, because you can't talk to that many people when you don't have the technology to do it. Guess what happened? That technology was developed after the turn of the last century, and so now propaganda becomes a big deal. It is the change, the dynamic change, that allows evil to reach a new kind of enslavement. Books and newspapers were the means done before. It was slow. It was very, very torturous in comparison. There was some propaganda. You know, people write a book, and it might take 20, 30 years, but eventually other people might buy into it. Newspapers were done, but there were counter-newspapers and lots of conflicting ideas. But the radio, and later television, of course, but the radio became a miraculous tool. And movies, too, by the way. All that came about at the same time. And the results were profound, because evil started to convince people that its way is right. That up is down and down is up, and everything else in between is complete craziness. Propaganda is the ability to convince people of untruths by lying to them consistently and as often as possible. Sometimes the lies are not even to achieve a specific goal, other than to just confuse people by lying. And most of the time, the first aspect of the lies are to get people to believe that, again, the people in power, the big people, the people who are controlling things, that are enslaving others, are doing the right thing. They're doing it for our sake. They're doing it to be good to us. They replace God, which is what they really want to do. Remember, they believe there is a God. They just don't want us to believe it, if we're good. And they want us to further follow them like they are God. Yes, they want to be God, because they don't like God. Most are convinced God is no good, and will not even admit that God exists in some circles. So you get to this point now where propaganda has become, and today we call it spin, by the way. Sort of like, that's the other thing. Once something becomes found out to be somewhat dark, just call it something else. Rename it. That works. It's another form of lying, right? It's like, there's no longer getting caught in a lie. All you do is change it to something else. You're not lying anymore. That's part of the whole system. And this system has been polished and improved to a very frightening level. And it is today succeeding and not losing ground, but gaining it, in terms of the planet becoming dark. Now, how come this happened? What's in the fifth sub-race of humans that in a few hundred years, I'm talking about millions of years now, a few hundred years, we're often running with evil, and everybody's, and we're voting evil in. we're turning them on the radio and TV, and it's all over the movies and every place else, really. All right, so what is happening? Well, it's about the development of the mental body. Evil needed to be able to get to the masses of people, because it's now working on a mass scale basis. Remember, that happened in recent times. And it wants to enslave the masses, but not through fear and subjugation and forces astrally or physically. Those are losing battles because the world has moved on. You've got to beat people in thoughts, mental thoughts. And mental thinking is way different than astral creative imagination. It's a totally different thing. mental thinking, there's a thing called truth. And you've got to convince people that what is untrue is true, and what is true is not. And so the way to do this is to damage their senses, the people's senses, which they do a great deal for themselves, because this race, us, has decided overwhelmingly to be egotistical, meaning that our thoughts are more important than anybody else's. And so we lose our ability to understand the thoughts of other people and the communication of other people. And once you've got that, you've got the magic ingredient for why propaganda can work. People's mental senses have to be damaged through their own egotism enough so that they will buy the untruth of what you're saying. Their senses no longer are good enough to tell them that you're not speaking the truth. And then you got it. And the more egotistical people become, the easier the system gets. Egotism happens to people who rely too much of their mental thoughts, in their mental thoughts, I should say, on what we'll call, for no other reason, knowledge. But it's actually knowledge that is disconnected from consciousness. So in other words, you have a lot of knowledge, but you aren't using the knowledge to understand anything. And whatever understanding you have isn't growing, because the knowledge that is increasing, everybody's gaining a knowledge every second of their life, to some extent, is not being connected to anything else. So you lose the consciousness, and that leaves the door open for you. That's where we are. Huge amounts of egotism, some of which has become arrogance in quite a few people. And that's what evil needs to do what it's doing. It allows the door for propaganda and for misuse of every form of communication that has mental content in it. Tell me that isn't a bad deal. Now, I realize, and I'm saying this because it sounds so nasty and terrible, I realize that some people are going to say, well, what can you do about that? Because it's obviously true, but what are you going to do about it? How do you convince people to stop being egotistical and become open-minded? And, you know, how do you get there? Because that's what's needed for them to start finding truth. And if you don't find truth when lies are being told to you, you're not going to see evil. And that's what evil wants. Evil hides behind truth by telling as many lies as possible to people who are egotistical enough not to know the difference. Okay, how bad is the egotism? About half of the population here in the United States and many other countries like the United States are egotistical enough to be affected by propaganda and to not see evil. That's not a good thing. Okay. Of that half, as much as, say, a quarter to another half of that half, are so far gone that no matter what was explained to them, it would be impossible at their present level of mental sense, at the present time, for them to find truth, and therefore to see evil. And that could be like 20-30% of the population. It's a big number. It could be bigger. So that's a really bad. Those are bad things we're talking about, because it leaves the door for evil so wide open at a time when evil is very important and looking for this great opportunity, which is right here, right now. So, okay, we have a dilemma on our hands, and it's a significant problem. And it isn't necessarily going to go away because I'm talking about it tonight. Believe me, I would. Oh, if give me one wish, that would probably be it. But not so foolish as to believe that will happen. Okay. So we've got this really serious problem, and it is growing daily, getting worse. How in the heck are we going to overcome it? And the answer is in the nature of evil, strangely, not in the nature of good people. In other words, left to their own devices, good folks are not going to probably find their way out of this mess on their own. But there is something that is interesting about this. And that is that evil is very, 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 very slowly losing consciousness. It doesn't even notice it. And others don't either. But in its loss of slight amounts of consciousness each day of its existence, it's losing its ability to maintain the level of propaganda and the thievery and the double-handedness, the total dishonesty, the enslavement procedures, the torture if necessary, and imprisonment if necessary, and killing if necessary. It loses that because it's very fractal, very small, because it's by nature misusing knowledge every second. And although it can replace some of its consciousness with power, it cannot maintain its position in enslavement and other factors without keeping its consciousness at least equal to where it was, which it can't do. So, because it's continually taking, it's continually stealing power from others and destroying and going against God, and the penalty for it, always, if you want to call it a penalty, the result of it is always loss of consciousness. You just can't get around it. That's the nature of the universe. So the cards are stacked. When you look at this, you could say, well, God had this whole thing figured out right from the beginning, because no matter what evil does, it eventually loses, because it's going to continue to lose consciousness. Eventually, it'll destroy itself. That's true, but not so for an individual planet. Evil ultimately destroys itself, but that doesn't mean any specific point in time and any particular planet will survive. It does not mean that. Earth is on the very edge. Anyway, we're close. But there is still this factor that consciousness is waning. The third ray is crystallized now for most people who are human. And so they're having harder and harder times maintaining their throat chakra and their ability to communicate with one another in ways that help them to maintain their power and control. They make mistakes in their communications, sometimes lacking in general, and sometimes missing in general. And these mistakes are adding up slowly, 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 so that things start coming out. Evil starts being discovered here and there and everywhere else, a little bit. Now, it's like a race. That is the good news for us. That's them. But the bad side of it is that they're still getting a lot of converts. The numbers are not going the other way yet. And the next 10 years are going to be pretty significant about how this whole thing is possibly going to work out. And the next 30 years, that may be even more permanent. So it's a really serious time. You know, it's a serious time for all of us that are physically here right now. Some of us will go on to the astral world, but it won't yet be resolved there. And there isn't a lot you can do to change it from the astral world side, because almost all the attention is being focused here, because this is where the forces allow evil to grow the most in the least amount of time. Let me explain it for you. The dark side understands us, unfortunately, better than we do, who are not on the dark side. And they're doing our darnest to make sure we don't get it. But the good news is, if you even get yourself a little more awake, a little more aware, the lies are everywhere. The deceit is everywhere. There is so much happening. It's unbelievable. And it's happening particularly here in the United States because we've been selected to be the grand experiment to see if egotism can win out for the dark side. And if they can really destroy what was the greatest experiment in political history, the United States, greatest experiment. By the way, helped by members of the Next Committee, and meant to attempt to bring about mental truth before what is happening is happening. So it's been a contest for hundreds of years, but for the most part, through great struggling, we've been kind of hanging on with our fingernails, and I think we've been slipping the last few years. Maybe the next year or so will reveal so much of what I've been talking about. You know, I've been talking about corruption, and subversiveness, and control, and secrecy, and the desire to effectively destroy what is the country, this country, to destroy free markets, and to devalue the money, and to make it so that this great place that was the leading country on earth becomes nothing. And every attempt has been made to subdue or destroy our ability to influence other countries in a positive way. Now, evil wants that. It seeks that, but it also will use the attack of, or even a pseudo attack, a false attack, on our country as a means to remove the rights of people. Got to have martial law. We got to do this and that because, after all, there could be a boogeyman around every corner. There's a terrorist maybe in your basement you don't even know about. They're coming in from the drains. I'm telling you, that's one of the best methods they have. One of the big lies in the propaganda machine. And it's still an ace card. No matter how much darkness and evil is found out, the ace card is to say, well, we just got attacked. Of course, they have to allow the attack to take place by not doing something about it, right? We just got attacked, and now we got to take the rest of your rights away, or at least let you know about all the ones we've already taken that you didn't know about. Because after all, we're here to protect. Make your life secure. Enslave you. Make you secure. All right. And then you get privileges if you participate. The IRS is not going to audit you. They'll audit your the people you don't like. Right? Yeah. And who knows what else? Oh, I know. They're not really listening to your phone calls, right? Or are they? You know, it's a question of how much are you going to believe is the truth coming from someone who has said thousands of lies and a whole administration that it's built on. And people get in front of Congress that are parts of it and lie, and everybody lies. Well, you know, there's an old saying. And if you can't figure that one out, so it's something to consider at this point. And I want you to think about that while I give you a rest, a little bit of a rest anyway, and what I'm going to tell you about. Well, I haven't talked about healthy habits, health foods, here in Phoenix. You live in the Phoenix area. If you haven't been to Healthy Habits, you should try them out. They sell my books there. That's not the reason I'm telling you about them. They do also have probably the greatest variety of supplements in the entire city. And their prices are competitive, very competitive. And there's good people there working there trying to be of help. And they've always been good to us. They carry some of the
herbs that we've, the supplements we've made. But the most important thing is that their general attitude is what the store says, healthy habits. And so that's something to consider. If you haven't been there, it's 6029 North 7th Street in Phoenix. And if you want to call them, 602-252-6000. 602-252-6000. And they're there from Monday through Saturday, that's tomorrow as well, from 9 to 6. Also, I occasionally am on a radio show that Dr. Dan does over there, and that's usually 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. And sometimes when I'm on there, people say, oh, yeah, I listen to your show, and all that other stuff. Except sometimes they never heard of me before, which is okay, too. Anyway, if you haven't tried them, Healthy Habits, go on over. It's a big store. You actually can get lost because they have so many aisles with so many different things. It's all over. It's like every place you turn, there's some new product that you haven't heard of before or seen. Give it a shot. All right, so let's go back to what I was saying then about evil, is trying to understand what evil is trying to do. What is the long-term plan? I mean, I talk obviously about our present administration here in the United States. It's also worldwide. And, you know, we got more and more people doing more and more bad things. About, if we were to look at the process, in terms of total enslavement, there's about 2 million people that in one way or another are enslaved at a significant level on Earth. That's a huge number. Out of those people who are enslaved, about a third are being convinced or are convinced enough to buy into the system of their enslavement. That's a huge number. A third of 2 million. It's like 600,000-700,000 people. That's about 10% of the world right now. 1 in 10 people are on the road to becoming enslaved. Remember, the race was wiped out. The Atlantean race was wiped out when it was 1 in 4. So I'm telling you, it was about 1 in 10 on the road. That doesn't mean they're evil. There's still very few evil people. The number of evil people is way less. But in a generation or two, those 700,000 could become genuinely evil folks. And in another generation or two, you can have a quarter of a planet. It accelerates just that fast, particularly with our communication methods as they are today. It couldn't have been done before this because we didn't have the communication. Everything from cell phones to just name it, we have instant communication from everyone on the planet, right? And how many TV stations are, I don't know, countless. How many radio stations? Same thing. Huge number. Satellite radio. Satellite this and that, everything else. It's big. All right. Then what the heck are we going to be able to do about this situation? Because it seems as though how are we ever going to get out of it? The answer is the following. Well, first of all, the mistake factor is big. The good news is evil is making more and more mistakes. Those that are aware of what evil is doing need to become as vocal as possible. Now, does that mean you should get on the radio on Friday nights and do what I do? If you want, please join me. Yes. But if that still frightens you or you don't have whatever to do it, then do it in some other way. It is absolutely critical to communicate as loudly and as intelligently and most importantly as consciously as you can at this particular point. That could change everything. There needs to be an outcry
and a freeing of those 2 million people that presently are enslaved. They're everywhere. The predominance of them are in the following locations. They are in the countries about to become a caliphate from Islam. That is not just the Middle East. It includes places like Pakistan and Afghanistan. And because Afghanistan is not going to exist much longer, as we know it, that's part of the plan of the folks in this country. But also places like Russia and places such as, I'm not saying also inclusive, but such as parts of Europe. Okay. Why parts of Europe? Because unfortunately, there is a, we'll call it a futility sense, that life cannot be enjoyed unless someone else is taking care of you. And that means financially as well as every other way. Everybody wants to be a child. But, of course, nobody wants to be enslaved, so. The object here is to let people recognize they're being enslaved or they are enslaved at some significant level, and that the only way to get out of it is through freedom. Freedom means you've got to take responsibility for yourself and for others at the same time to make it grow. It means free markets. It means things that people who are living in socialistic or worse, communistic areas will have to change, or else they have no hope of getting out of the 2 million, or 2 billion, excuse me. Where else is this being found that we have these problems? Well, of course, we know there's China, and there's Vietnam, and there's other kinds of countries following in their footsteps. How dangerous is that? It's pretty dangerous. Now, China in itself would seem like, oh, gee, China has 2 billion people, something like that, folks. Well, interestingly, even though China has nearly that number that I said, I think it's more like 1.4 billion, or something like that. But the point is that they, not all the people in China necessarily are enslaved. Subconsciously, in some circumstances, and in other circumstances, consciously, are seeking freedom as best as I can. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't quickly be turned around. They can be in a generation or two, and that's what I was trying to explain. The most dangerous place for turnaround, there's two of them, the most, two most dangerous places of turnaround are China and its associated controlling areas, including North Vietnam. North Korea, excuse me. And with Vietnam included. And the Near East, or the Middle East, which is going into a caliphate. But that includes Afghanistan and Pakistan. Those are the most dangerous places for the turnaround to get the most severe. Those are the places where more people are enslaved. But percentage-wise, not all people are enslaved. Be aware, there's still a strong minority in both China and parts of the Middle East that don't want that. All right. If we pay attention and do something in the most significant ways, there's still some hope. But we're losing that literally by the day as recognition is not made by most people that there is a tremendous force against there being an awareness to the overall, we'll call it, darkness around us. People are afraid of us. Now, where does that fear come from? It comes from both futility in their own lives of trying to overcome the, we'll call it, overflow of this darkness, but it also comes from, amazingly, the idea that they could have been so wrong about so much, and for a period of time that seems excessive. That's the fear. Like, how could I be that punk? Because the egotism is a big problem. Their own egotisms are still blocking them from being open-minded enough to say, you know what? I really don't. I didn't have this together, and I didn't see what was really happening. They're not there yet. Even the people that today I hear saying, oh, yeah, this is no good, it's bad, they aren't saying, well, but 4 years ago, I didn't really get it. No, that's it. And you need to do that in order to move forward. You can't just say, well, this is just a problem today. You got to go back and re-listen to history. Re-listen to speeches. Re-listen to all kinds of stuff. Look at what laws were passed. And then you can start putting it all together and seeing what is really happening. And the other thing is the admission, the need to admit that some parts of what people are afraid of in terms of freedom need to be allowed. Even I have said, you know, I hate the idea of people just taking drugs and destroying themselves. I hate the idea of all kinds of other self-induced destructive things can happen. But, you know, there can't be freedom if you don't let people be free, even if you don't like the results of that. Sometimes the best way to deal with the results is to make people responsible for the end product of their behaviors rather than trying to prevent the behaviors in the first place. As a matter of fact, unless they're children, that is the technical correct ingredient. Make them responsible. Someone wants to smoke marijuana, okay, but if you drive and you have an accident, you get into a lot of trouble, just like you were driving drunk. Or if you can test for the DCH or whatever and figure out some way of determining what that effect is, and so, then you can make a law about that just the way we do with drunk drivers. But so you do certain things that have consequences for irresponsible actions, but do not inhibit behavior as a, we'll say, unilateral approach to dealing. This is a mature way of enacting freedom and laws and allowing people to do so without government controlling. That's a tough thing. Now, many people call that libertarianism, and I do believe that most of what I think I am is a libertarian, or other people may think differently. But the point is that there isn't really a word for this, because the word is not a political word. It's a word about state of mind. That's our problem. It's the state of mind that's wrong. Open-mindedness is the state we need to get to. And closed-mindedness is the state we're in. Evil needs closed-mindedness. It so much needs it that it does everything it can to promote it. So it doesn't want people to change their thinking in a way that allows other people to think more and behave more in virtuous ways, or even unvirtuous. What evil wants is to control everything, including the minds of those that are subjects. And that's where the battle is. It's in the fifth subworld where evil is making the greatest battle. This particular, right now, evil is not the dominant force in the fifth subworld, but it could be in another 20 to 40 years. That's the end of Earth, by the way. It may take 100 years or 200 years longer, but Earth is finished when that happens. That's my understanding. So we're close to a bad, bad place. Bad, bad place. Now, why can't we just start all over again the way we did with Atlantis? Well, because everything is accelerated hundreds of times from what it was then. We'd be right back to where we started from in less than a generation. And it wouldn't do any good. you would have the same thing all over again, but it'd be worse, probably. So there's no useful outcome by doing that older behavior, because we've advanced so far. It's a very dangerous time for us all. Okay, so how do we also deal with the evil coming in from sources that are so far away, all this group soul evil business? Is there anything we should concern ourselves with that? Is there anything we can do about it? Well, that's the part about angel's wisdom that I really find intriguing. If a person really understands the nature of all of angel's wisdom, in some respects, it doesn't, you know, I'm not talking about becoming a great teacher, something like that. But if you just got a basic understanding of angel's wisdom, which is what God is, basically, if you think that is true, then the chances of this evil from far away, so to speak, really being a dominant factor on Earth is diminished tremendously. Now, why is that true? It's because the seed of evil is incessantly the question of the nature of God not being just and good. If you can understand God well enough to recognize that God is just and good and is doing what absolutely needs to be done, then that evil from the dark side, from even the greatest dark galaxy that exists, can't break through the overwhelming consciousness that comes from that, just that one change in perspective. Even though everything else could be still lame and pretty miserable, if most people, over half of Earth, presently came to that conclusion and really understood it, not through faith. It won't work through faith. Faith is wonderful, but it doesn't replace consciousness. Faith is the thing called the sixth-ray approach. Consciousness is a secondary approach. You need to do it through education. Boy, teaching angels wisdom in education is definitely going to require a change in our present systems, right? And we need ageless wisdom charter schools. There are a few ageless wisdom schools, but there's very few. And they're too cloistered and too old. They don't teach, demystify ageless wisdom. They teach a very mystical form that nobody really gets. I mean, these days, kids are just, it doesn't even reach to the minds of people anymore that are alive. It's great, baby. Three generations ago. Not so good today. So we need this because it is the antidote to the tremendous pressure that's being put on us from outside this planet's existence. And we are up against a tremendously powerful force. And the only thing I know that will work is what I suggested. Get about half or more of the people on this planet aware of the nature of God, and that force can't break through. It becomes silly. People start laughing about it. Oh, so you're evil from galaxy XYZ on the other side of the universe? Well, you know what? You got a lot of problems because we got your number. And we're not afraid of you. We think you're kind of silly. And you know what? You haven't got forever because your consciousness is eventually going to fall apart. Oh, we know. You can keep taking over other worlds and other galaxies and do all this stuff. I think it's terrific. But you're not going to win. And best thing about it is you're not going to beat us. And we're going to get through this and be able to teach other people how to do the same. And that is the experiment that Earth is in. When Earth was set up as a potential laboratory for dealing with this most oppressive evil. And this was done even before, way before there were human beings. It was generally believed that Earth would fail. The majority of super beings didn't think Earth would make it because there wasn't enough time to get to where we need to be, like right now. We needed another 10 million years, at least, or so, and then there's about 10 million years left. You know, in a few million years, the sun will be untenable as a sun for Earth, and you'd have to change the position, or all kinds of crazy stuff. And long before that, humans shouldn't be here. This experiment is coming to a close. There are supposed to be two more races of humans, and then a new round of humans, but all that is dependent upon us not destroying ourselves. And so this is a critical time, and it was known that this could happen this way, and it has. But the experiment is to see if human beings can recognize their own creator enough to not become mentally contaminated by evil to the point where we don't know the truth from the non-truth. And that is the main experiment. There's a whole bunch of side ones, but that's the main biggie. And it's the one that we are in right now. It is unbelievably scary because within it is almost echo of the past that has not bode well for us. But I still think that it's possible that what I'm teaching here, even as avant-garde or silly, as some people think it is, or whatever, may become a dominant issue in a few decades and could save this whole thing. I'm not saying that for me, because I don't even think I'll be here. But if I am, I alone will not be enough to make the difference. All of you listening and many more are the important folks. And I apologize for tonight's show because we've lost 45 minutes or whatever. But the thing is that, This is the nature of trying to do what I'm trying to do, is that we have many forces of evil that we deal with on a daily basis. It's hard to imagine how much there is being done to try to prevent what I'm doing. I mean, it's unbelievable, as simple as it seems. And I'm not saying today's technical problems have anything to do with evil. I think they have to do with a bad piece of equipment right now. But the better news about this, the better understanding about this, that in a collective sense, there is still a decent chance that through education, the second line, and unhiding of what tonight's show is about, we might just make it. Now, again, I don't want to mislead it. I don't think that this particular show or this particular time, like this month or whatever, is going to be the change. I'm just saying that these are the seeds of it. And I'm sure that I'm a thorn in the side, and so are those that are helping produce everything that's going on. A thorn in the side of the dark side. Why am I sure of that? Well, because when you kick a monster and it roars back at you, that's usually a good sign that there's a monster that you kick. So that's it. And the thing to be aware of is that nothing I'm saying is going to make a difference without all of you and a lot of other people doing something yourselves. The words themselves are maybe interesting, but they don't have the ability to make a change. The change has to come from what I said earlier. It's like you've got to become open-minded. When I say this show is about thinking and helping people to think, I'm talking about being open-minded. I'm not talking about knowledge either. I'm talking about consciousness. So it's a whole other kind of way of dealing with a really serious problem. And one that I think is, in the long term, has a good chance for making it. Now, does that mean that we're not going to have some, maybe, victories here and there? Even if nobody hears the show, even nobody... I think that there could be, but the momentum is going against us. Why is that? Well, because the leadership in this country, which is the leading country, is on the dark side. It's evil. And it's enabling the darkness throughout the world to grow. Be it the Taliban or the Muslim Brotherhood, or it could be literally Al-Qaeda and the nameless folks who have become evil because they don't believe in God, but have 100 different names and positions in their existence. And they're being enabled in multiple ways, and clandestinely, I might add, while the rest of us are lulled into a kind of disbelief that they really wouldn't do that because that would be evil. Yeah, I know. You got to call things as they are when you're open-minded, not the way you'd like them to be. Sure, I would like to have a great, wonderful feeling and thought that everything that's going on is just right. It's the way it's supposed to be. I would like that. But that doesn't mean that I would let that change my thinking so that I don't see the truth. I get hit. Also, it's good to have humility, obviously, you need humility. And the humility is that no matter what I say, there's certainly open to question can be wrong, no matter what I think I know and I teach could have major problems. It all seems to fit together, it all seems to make sense to me, but that doesn't mean anything. That's happened before with lots of folks, and it turned out to be that they didn't have a clue. So we have that issue. And in order to overcome that issue, humility, gratitude, and a willingness to try to understand even the most ridiculous arguments by others, to be absolutely as careful as possible if one's deducing of one's own truth. At any one moment, there's one truth, and in every moment after that, the truth changes. Difficult for us to understand that. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can look in Life's and Meaning, and it will explain that concept. This also means that when the dark side teaches lies and tells us lies, we may become more accepting of that because we know the truth changes. Therefore, why couldn't it be that the lie from yesterday is today's truth, or maybe there was no lie yesterday, it's just that it's changed, the truth has changed to today's truth, so it's not a lie anymore. Yeah, that's a mouthful. Okay, the answer to that is the following. At any one moment, the truth was the truth. You can go back in time and see that the truth still holds. If you go back in time and see the truth was a lie, All it means is you were an illusion when you thought it was a joke. At that time, as things were. That gets rid of the spin. It prevents people from being able to use that befuddled model and cross over into some nonsense. That truth is not truth, and this is not truth. There is no truth because it's just a... As it keeps changing, well, truth does change. But at any one moment, there is a truth. How else can we solve the problem with egotism in people's minds? While teaching ageless wisdom was a very good thing, I suggested, it goes beyond that. In the parental elements of raising children, children need to be given the opportunity to think for themselves, to make mistakes that aren't so costly that it kills them or seriously harms them or others, and to be able to question that which they hear. And if you can't question what you hear, then you're enslaved by your parents. And once you're enslaved by your parents, being enslaved by all those other folks out there that want to do this makes it even easier. So parenting becomes crucial. And let me be so bold as to say this. It's best to be parented by a mother and a father. It's best to be parented in an environment of love and consistency, at least for the time that the person is growing up. And it's best to be parented by people who are willing to admit their wrong to the children and to others in front of their children, and to allow their children to find God at the earliest age possible. Don't force them, and don't make them into some kind of religious persuasion. Teach them your religion, that's fine. But let them look into other ones. And let them learn about God as God, not as some religious figure representing God. It's best to be so open-minded that the kids argue. It may be demand. Sometimes rudely, sometimes wrongly, than to have children who are mindless little robots and who go to school just to learn more knowledge so they can be further mindless. Also be careful about where you send them to school. Don't send them to schools that are closed-minded. Best to find some school that has some semblance of open-mindedness, if possible. And if not, then move. And teach ageless wisdom if you find that that's right for you. Let them learn that. And find a school, maybe, that teaches it. If there is one that's doing it, it's open-minded. Remember, you could be closed-minded about ageless wisdom. You don't want to have that, because that's no better than any other closed-minded position. So the children are really the hope for the future. And right now, they have been going in exactly the wrong direction, mostly because the educational system has been contaminated by people who have an agenda. And it isn't always just left and right and conservative and liberal. It's much deeper than that. It has to do with closed-minded versus open-minded. It has to do with the nature of thinking itself. The mental world is in battle in many ways. Anyway, if you do find that this show is right for you and the stuff written in Ageless Wisdom makes some sense, then use that as a model in every part of your life. Because children learn what they live more than what they're taught. And that's so important. If you live a life where you're open-minded, if you live a life seeking truth and living for the truth, then they become the extension and the growth of your own consciousness. Consciousness grows from one generation to the next when it's done the way I just suggested. It shrinks if it's done the opposite, and it doesn't grow at all, but it doesn't shrink, if left in an environment where thought or thinking is not encouraged without it being relegated or predetermined based upon some we'll call it prejudicial truth, if it's a truth at all. Lies, mostly. And propaganda. Our schools have more propaganda to them than most other institutions, on an average. Great deal of danger there, because that's how the dark side is winning. It's changing the young people who will be the adults. And they have less wisdom and less good judgment, but they have a lot of energy. And they can do a lot to harm themselves and others long before they become conscious enough to realize mistakes in their ways. It's a perfect storm for the dark side to move in and do some terrible stuff. Let's get the young folks. They're the easy marks. Well, that's true if our schools are the way I said, and if the parents are just not even paying attention. If working is necessary just to put food on the table, although I believe in child labor laws, better to put the kids to work and raise them with parental guidance than to have none, because you can't make it home because you're trying to make a living. And I know that the many people in many countries, not just where I'm at, are having that problem, and that is an issue. It's a big issue. All right, so let's try to sum up today's show. And I've made up for some time here. I cut some corners in a few areas that I was going to cover, but it's okay. We got most of it in. Evil in general comes from a conflict with God. It can't be extinguished from a planet until that conflict is resolved. It can only be resolved through education, loving, familiar life, a society of open-mindedness, and the reduction of enslavement of people, with freedom being a huge part and universal love being the other side of the coin. Those are the ingredients necessary to overcome it. And once at least half of the population at least have the rudiments of what I just said in their, we'll say, consciousness, the evil from outside of this world, which is huge and more powerful than we can ever imagine, is blocked. It won't be able to effectively install the evil people that do exist here. And that will cause them to become much lower in consciousness, much faster. They'll become very quickly self-destructive. That's good. It's a really good thing, actually. And self-destructive only means that they won't live very long to do very much bad, because they'll go on to the astral world and they won't do as well there as they might have. And the monastic world will completely turn around, or they will just keep coming back for more of the same. And they won't win. That's good. In general, the best way to deal with evil is from a non-fearful position. Fear is one of the tools that evil has used throughout the ages. But now the fear is that our own thinking, it can't be trusted. And we have to trust the thinking of evil leaders. Okay. This is the nature of evil of today. It wasn't before. We used to have to fear the evil people coming in and crashing in our houses and raping and killing and pillaging and stealing and that sort of stuff. That isn't the method today. Today it's the methods of stealing our minds. By removing the ability for us to see truth, we can find truth by first finding some of the basic rudiments of God, holding on to those, both through faith and through understanding, and then being charitable to those who have lost it, helping them with an arm and a hand to bring them up while this battle is going on. We can't afford to lose anyone because we weren't helpful towards them when they were in need. This happens over and over again. And the one thing I can say about the United States is it has always had charity in comparison to other places. So at least comparatively, it's been a big deal. Remember this. It won't solve the problem alone, but it is one of the great, we're called legs of the whole thing. You've got to have it. All right. Then finally, to, we'll say, finalize my show for tonight, the entire part of Where Evil Fits is thinking of it as a test, and the greatest test happens to be on planets like Earth. Earth is rare. It is not a normal planet. Don't think the rest of the world is like, the rest of the universe is like this. But that adds to the nature of the evil of Earth because we don't know that. I know it, but you guys don't. I understand it even more so maybe than other people do. This is one of the worst places to be. But if you don't buy into that, then you're caught in the chance of giving up on God. Know all that I've taught historically and everything else and put it in context. And there's so much more you can read of stuff I've written and other things, the shows I've done, and maybe other people have said and done and taught. Be open to all of that. And I hope this has really made a difference for you. Until next week, this has been Niles McFarlane for Why Life Is.